Hey there, Discerning Thoughtbot podcast listener. I just wanted to take a quick moment to ask for your feedback. There's so many cool things that we'd love to do with all the shows, and want to know how you feel about our sponsor reads and the possibility of starting a Patreon-style campaign to make them all possible. If you could head over to tbot.io/survey for a super short questionnaire, your input would be much appreciated. That link again is tbot.io/survey. And hey, thanks.
We have the worst, like, I don't understand how the Wi-Fi could be so amazingly bad here in a huge-ass co-working space, like a gigantic co-working space. They have three or four floors in the middle in downtown Austin, and the show I recorded with Mark yesterday, we were, you know how, like, you and I have had shows where we're recording and at the end it's like, oh, wow, we were way, like, sync drifted just over the internet, you know what I mean? It's like, Our audio, like, there was a huge delay. And it's just consistently like that. Like, Hangouts are basically unusable here. And I think the internet is worse in, like, the phone booths and right here where I do my podcast recordings. You know what I mean? It's just like,
like specifically,
it's exactly where I want the Wi-Fi to be the best, and it's the worst.
Right.
So I think I'm so tired of fighting recording problems, but there's a Ethernet port on the wall over there. So I think what I'm going to do is buy an Ethernet adapter and
try that,
and a long ass Cat 5 or something. Just run it across the room, because I don't know what else to do.
By the way, I read somewhere recently that there is Cat 5 cable and there's Cat 6 cable. And if you're not using Cat 6 cable, you're actually, these days, networks are fast enough that it can make a difference. So if you're not using Cat 6 cable, you won't get as high speeds as you would with Cat 5 cable. Like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that was not the case. It didn't really, no one had networks fast enough for it to matter. But nowadays, people
Interesting.
Do.
Good to know. So I guess I'll buy a Cat 6.
I don't know. I have no idea technically what the difference is, but apparently there's something.
I think it's more cats. I think that's the difference.
More cats.
One more cat. That would be my professional opinion on what the difference is as a technology worker.
You're the expert.
Right. Hey, everybody. This is Gordon in Austin.
And this is Jack in Stockholm.
And this is Build Phase. Well, do you like doing tech support stuff for, like, family and friends and stuff? I guess I shouldn't assume that people dislike doing that or feel uncomfortable doing that.
You know, I used to not like doing it much. I guess, and I'm not a huge fan of it in general.
Right.
It's okay when it's family, but it ends up being weird when it's like somebody's relatives, aunts, neighbors, uncle. It's like, oh, you're good. Come over here and help this guy you've never met fix his thing. Like, that's not much fun.
Right. You're good with computers. You work with computers. Help me debug Microsoft Word on Windows XP on this Dell from 2002.
Right.
It's like, I haven't touched any of this in years. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. The one exception for me really is my parents, who I don't meet that often and I'm not in their homes that often. And I wish I could be around to help them more, but I can't, and it's kind of frustrating. They're, like, the two people that I would be most willing to help out, but I'm not really around, so what can you do?
Right.
But what were you going to say about...
Just that I dislike doing it.
Okay.
There was no point. I was just complaining about people genuinely asking me for help and my not wanting to provide that help.
That's totally valid. Some people want to give that up. Actually, I was talking to a company here in Stockholm that has, they're starting up a thing that is kind of like crowdsourced Geek Squad. So instead of relying entirely on full-time employees, they can have people who can, like, sign up and say, hey, I'm really good at helping out people's modem problems, and I'm available these hours of the week, and if you have cases that come up, then contact me, and then I can help them with their thing. Which is kind of cool. So, like, the people who actually are good at a particular thing and want to help other people can do this and get paid for it, ideally, instead of just being looped into doing stuff for right. free. And then also actually get the right people to actually solve the problems. Because like, right. just like you were saying, if someone wants help with their Windows XP machine, I'm not much good for them. But people who don't know just say, oh, you're a computer guy. You can do this.
Yeah. That seems like a good idea.
Yeah. So there's that. But so far, they just are barely available in Sweden and some other Nordic countries. So it's small. But actually, it's kind of a cool idea because they want to make it broad enough that you can not only find someone who is good at the technology you need help with, but who lives really close by, is, you know, a short drive or maybe even a walk away from where you live in Stockholm. Mm-hmm. So it's like they would try and first tackle things on the phone, and if they couldn't solve it on the phone, they could come and do a house call.
Yeah,
I think the main thing going against them is that people are so used to having free help from somebody that they know. Like, you can always rope somebody into it.
Right.
Like, oh, I'll call this person, somebody's going to know. And mm-hmm. so people are not going to want to pay $20 or $100 or whatever. But we'll see.
Yeah. So, I don't know. What have you been working on?
Well, I started a new actual job, yep. consulting company. And that's been fun so far. Same company that Rada is at. So that's cool. We're mm-hmm. still...
That's good.
We're still together on things, and we might actually work on some projects together, which, you know, despite having sat 4 feet away from each other the past 3 years, we've never actually worked on any actual client projects together.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so much of what we were always doing in the Stockholm office with Thoughtbot was just, a lot of it was one-person jobs.
Right.
And even when it was multi-person jobs, it was seldom iOS. It was web things, so... Yeah, it just never really happened. But So we always talked about stuff. We were always, you know, talking to each other about what we were doing, but we were never really working together, which we now potentially will be. So it's good.
That's good.
It seems like a good company that we're at. It's my hunch is that if I had ever been working in an office, a Thoughtbot office like in Boston or New York City, where there's a lot of people and a lot of things going on, this is probably pretty much what that feels like. You know, there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of different projects coming and going, people coming and going.
Yeah.
A much more vibrant environment than you get when you'd only have 4 or 5 people.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, it is interesting the difference between, you know, the Boston office and the Austin office. 30 right. people in Boston, and we're sitting at, I think, 7 right now here in Austin. So it's like a huge change. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's just a different dynamic.
Yep. So anyway, I haven't really settled on a single project yet. I'm only sort of in my second week of this. We're talking to a lot of different customers or potential customers about a variety of things. And yeah, we'll see. But so far it's been good. It's fun to be doing things and having a lot of stuff going on around me.
Yeah.
And I've been messing around a bit more with WatchKit than I had before. Just like making some toy things, and both with WatchKit and with CloudKit. So I've got a thing that you run it on your phone and on the watch, and that all saves to CloudKit, and it's pretty cool. I haven't quite implemented things all the way out. So CloudKit lets you, like, you create these record objects that are just sort of fancy dictionaries that can be saved to the cloud. Mm-hmm. And you can fetch those. You make queries and put a predicate on there and things, and you fetch things. And then you can, what I haven't done yet is you can sign up for notifications also based around predicates. So I can make a predicate that says, okay, if any records are inserted, records of this type that match this predicate, then I want to be notified. And those notifications come into the app delegate on iOS, or they come into the, what's it called? The extension delegate or whatever on the watch. And on the watch, it's more limited. Like, I think Apple guarantees up to 50 a day will be received by the watch, but not necessarily more than that. I think that's the deal. So they want to sort of conserve battery usage. So if you have, I think, like, one of the app examples they talked about at the WWDC this summer was, if you have an app that is showing stock prices and they're changing fast and furious all day long, you would not want to be pushing those out to the watch in any way.
And right.
Like, there are a variety of ways to push things, and one of those is CloudKit, right? So, yeah. So anyway, it's interesting. I haven't yet done the thing of actually creating these notifications to sign up for for things changing. But that's sort of the idea. So I want to be able to sort of tap something on the watch and it will get saved CloudKit and the phone will notice the change right away because it'll get a notification. That's the idea.
So does that mean you don't have to run your own push servers?
Yeah. For that kind of stuff, yeah. Like you can just watch data and have the CloudKit will tell you when that data changes.
So could you, in theory, run your own server that connects with CloudKit through their external web services API to basically use CloudKit as a push server?
Yeah, I would think so.
Seems like you could, right?
Because once you get notified when data changes, I mean, then you're back in the app, you know, and at that point you can toss up a local notification, which for the user looks like any other notification.
So you can't have CloudKit send, like, it will only send silent notifications. You can't register for CloudKit to send you actual push notifications.
Right. I think it may, in terms of technology, it may work the same, basically, but it doesn't come into your app as a push notification. It comes in as a CloudKit notification.
Content available,
basically.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember. Oh. I haven't done it yet, so I haven't taken that step. But it seems like it does that. And then, so I guess I don't know if it even, if it sends you in that notification, if it sends you the updated or new or deleted record itself, or if it just sends you a thing saying, hey, this happened, matching your predicate, and you have to go do a query on your own. I'm not really sure. I'm not there yet.
Even if you did have to do that, and then you, like you said, just shove a local notification up.
That's pretty minimal, and that's really easy, and does not involve setting up a push server and certificates and all that stuff.
And so, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it's pretty neat. It's not, you know, CloudKit won't solve every problem, but for some stuff, it seems to be pretty decent. The only real difficulty I've had so far is that when you're doing it on the watch, for some reason, WatchKit does not support CloudKit in the simulator, only on the device. And that is problematic for two reasons. One is that when you're actually running on the device, you know, it has to push it out to your phone, which pushes to the watch, and then it's slow. Like starting the app is slow, launching is slow, hitting breakpoints and stopping and debugging and stepping is slow. Like you want to step, you're used to stepping forward in an app that you're running locally or even just on a plugged in iPhone.
Yep.
And it doesn't take a long time, but on the watch it takes, you hit step and you got to wait a few seconds before it actually will step to the next thing. Likewise, you know, you want to print something out in the command line of the debugger, inspecting something, it just takes a long time. So that's a problem. And another problem I found is that something can get messed up in the technology when you are just installing apps, like running apps from Xcode on the watch. Like sometimes it will just like seem to not happen, or it'll run the app maybe. In Xcode, it will look like the app is running, but nothing happens on the watch. And then if you go in on the watch and like bring up the app by tapping on its icon, then you'll see, oh, like you'll see it kind of flash up and you'll see a thing, a spinner start to go showing that it's relaunching the app. And you see, Xcode tries to deal with this. It actually seems to sort of notice that, oh, this thing has started. Oh, it went down. Oh, it started again. Oh, okay. And it kind of it sometimes will attach to it and let you debug, but sometimes it will not. And sometimes I've had it go where Xcode seems to think that the app is launched and running. You know, you can see in the debugger view on the left when it looks like an app is running, and it shows like there are little bars ticking across and showing you CPU percentage. But on the watch itself, the app is nowhere to be seen. It doesn't have an icon in the launcher. It's not on your screen. Nothing's happening. So it's so that kind of stuff seems to be a lot hairier than actually just doing the debugger on the simulator. So the simulator for the watch seems to work better. But again, no iCloud at all on the watch, on the simulator. And why that is, I don't know. I was searching on the internet. It seems like in earlier betas, it was maybe there, and it maybe was taken away in like beta 3 or something. I'm not sure. And now in the full release, it is still gone.
That's really weird if it was there and they just removed it. Like, part of me is used to, at this point, weird differences between the simulator and device in terms of capabilities. like not happy about those differences because it's very frustrating to have kind of a hobbled simulator, but I'm used to those differences. It's very weird to me that they would introduce something on the simulator and then take it away later.
Yeah. I may be misreading it too. That may not be what's happening, but yeah. That's kind of the impression that I got. But I mean, they do put things in Xcode and then take it away later. Do you remember, were you doing this when they started having wireless debugging that you could actually debug to an iPhone that was not plugged in?
I remember that, but only vaguely, and I never used it. It's gone now?
Yeah, it's gone. It was only there for a short time. Like, I think not even a year was it around, I think. It probably just because it didn't work that well. I think I probably tried it, and I can't remember if it worked or not. If it worked, it was probably just stupidly slow and flaky, and so I gave up on it.
Right. I can't imagine that working well. Like,
no.
The reason that I didn't ever use it is probably because I was like, well, that's not... I don't have time for this crap.
Yeah,
I have other things to do.
That's not going to be good. You just know it's not going to be good.
No.
And I think that's...
I mean, it sounds good, right?
Yeah, it sounds good. It sounds like what you want, but in practice, you just know it's not going to work that well. And that's the experience you still have right now with debugging on the actual watch instead of on the simulator.
That sucks.
As far as I can see, just like, ugh. All power to them for at least trying to make it happen. And for, I mean, the technology is there that it can happen, but it does not work very well yet.
Yeah. I've still done, for all intents and purposes, zero watch development.
Yeah.
I'd like to try it again because when I did it the last time, I just found it an incredibly unpleasant experience. Just across the board unpleasant.
Right.
The lack of testing support still doesn't fill me with like a lot of excitement and joy or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, that still bothers me a lot. But even beyond that, like I would hope that it's gotten better since watchOS 3, but I feel like it probably hasn't.
I think the lack of testing can be somewhat made up for if you build your software the way we usually try and build it, right? Where things are decoupled and try and make the GUI layer as thin as possible. Like, you know, it seems like we settled on a couple of years ago to kind of not bother trying to test GUIs so much,
trying to
split everything out so everything is in views and view models or, you know, presenters, whatever you want to have.
Right.
And so like right now, what I have in this test app that I'm working on, okay, I haven't actually written any, there are no tests in this app of mine, but the code is very much split out so that the actual code in the watch app that is exclusively for the watch app is very, very small. It's just an interface controller Interface controller, yeah.
Yeah.
That just does a couple things and it just talks to some other stuff that I have that does all the CloudKit, and that code is identical. It's the same source code file being used for the watch and the phone. So I can test that. I can write tests around that, you know, and run it against the phone app. So
yeah. And that's what we're doing with our open source stuff, right? Is we have tests that get run against the iOS, Mac and tvOS targets. But it does bother me that I can't test that code when it's built against the architecture that it's going to be run with. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that is a concern. I mean, at that point, though, if it's really the same code on all these different platforms...
Yeah, it should be fine.
And it doesn't work on the watch, that probably means it's not your problem. It's Apple's problem or something, but you still want to know.
Yes, that's it exactly. I don't want to be caught by surprise with this stuff.
Right. Yeah, that is somewhat worrying. But I think that, like, overall, what they've added to watchOS 3 is pretty nice. It gives it a lot more capabilities. You know, we went from having watchOS 1, which was extremely limited. It was almost like, you know, it was almost like throwing web pages across a fence. Like, you didn't really, all the code is running on the phone, and just all you could just sort of push an interface across and say, here you go, and then wait for a button to be clicked or something.
Right.
From that to watchOS 2, where you at least were running on the watch and could do some things, but in terms of the kind of interfaces you could make, it was still very limited. And now you can use SpriteKit and SceneKit and whatever. So I think there's a lot of potential for more things to be done. And I think the addition of things like CloudKit, I think, will actually help quite a bit. Just in terms of what I've seen so far, it makes the synchronization of data across the watch and the phone a lot easier. So before, I think we talked about this before a little bit, the kind of back and forth communication between the watch and the phone when you're just sort of pushing things at each other. Mm-hmm. That is kind of hairy. And if you're going to build something that's exchanging a lot of model objects back and forth, suddenly you have to sort of deal with this. You have to kind of marshal these things and push them across the wire, or not the wire, the air.
Yeah.
And to pull them out on the other side. Whereas if you use CloudKit instead, it gives you a little bit more structure to things. And also it kind of, you know, CloudKit acts as a database. It acts as the single source of truth in a sense. So
right.
Whatever your apps are doing are just talking to CloudKit, and you never can get into a problem of, oh, well, I did the same thing on both the watch and the phone at the same time, so what's going to happen?
Right.
You know, which of these things is true? Well, it doesn't matter because they're both talking to the server anyway. The server is what's true. And so if you can always, you know, always kill your app and restart it, and you're back to whatever the server had.
Yeah.
So it seems promising. I'm enjoying it so far, despite the terrible watch launch times and stuff when you're debugging.
But have they cleaned up at all? Have they cleaned up like the weird lines around like what goes in the extension versus what goes in the app? Because I know that when I was doing it with watchOS 2, you needed like three things. Is that right? You needed you needed the glance, and you needed the watch extension, and then you needed the watch app. Is that the way it was?
Right. So there's still an app and an extension.
That's such a bummer.
The glance, I'm not sure if that's, was that a separate target?
I thought actually? So.
I never did a glance. I think that is what has
that's
kind
gone.
Of disappeared.
Yeah.
That's gone in watchOS 3. So I, the project that I have that I've been working on here, I made a totally clean slate project, and it gave me an iPhone app and tests and a WatchKit app and a WatchKit extension, and that's it.
But so, like,
so
why
you still
is
have
there,
to have the app and the extension. And I think, to me, it seems like those should not have to be distinct, right? It used to be that the extension was actually code running on the phone.
Right.
And the app was what was pushed across.
Is that the way it was?
Why or, those are, I think so.
See, I can't remember.
Because the app is the thing that has the storyboard in it.
Right.
And so all you'd have on the phone was like the storyboard. And the extension was the code.
Right. And so now the extension is being installed on the watch as well.
Yes, so they're both installed on the watch. I guess they're kind of bundled up together, but they still appear. I mean, there's still two targets in the project. I don't really know why, and I don't know when that's going to change.
Yeah, I hope it does, because I find that incredibly confusing.
Yeah, it's unnecessary mess, sort of.
Yeah, right.
And hopefully that they will get rid of that relatively soon. Maybe next year. Maybe watchOS 4. I mean, right now it's not really a problem.
Right.
You know, it's just sort of this additional thing. Mm-hmm. And like I found that I set the bundle display name, right? Because when you make one of these apps, you name the app, and the iPhone app gets that name, and the watch app gets name space WatchKit space extension. So like I made a complication, and that thing turned up when I got that working. It shows up on the watch, and you select it, and its name is app name WatchKit extension. Like, you have to go in and change that. And so I went into the extension target and changed the display name, and I went through the whole thing of, you know, making sure I got it off the watch and reinstalled it, and it was still wrong. So I had to go into the app target and change it there also. And just like, it's all these sort of like, why do I have to do this? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, man, WatchKit, it's the bee's knees.
Yeah.
And it's the pits.
I need to give it another shot, basically, is where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Look at some of the videos from this summer. There's some interesting stuff about how it works. There's a good video, I forget what it's called, where there's a guy sort of talking about kind of the life cycle of how an app on the watch is launched, and when it's launched, and when it gets updated, and all these things.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting. It's pretty complicated. Like, it gives you a lot of opportunities to do it wrong in a way. Like, it's set up so that if you want to be smart and save battery and still have a nice interface, there's a certain kind of sequence of things you have to do in the right order to make sure. Just because, you know, it's getting data pushed to it at weird times, and it's getting looked at weird times, and you kind of, there's kind of a lot to think about because the battery is so tiny. So.
Right. Cool. Wrap it up.
All right. Sure, let's do it.
So show notes for this episode are going to be found at buildphase.fm/110. As always, we appreciate ratings and reviews on iTunes. And if you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at buildphase, and you can send us email hosts@buildphase.fm. Did I miss anything?
I think that was it.
Cool. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you.